Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time for the Wrestling Inc. Monday Night Raw after show. And have we got a show for you? Braun Breaker's killing people. The Wyatt family's killing people. And Drew McIntyre was smart enough to get out of there before it all went down. Before we get into all of that, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Justin Labar and Flo Bo Boyce. Flo Bo, good to have you here on a Monday.
Yeah, it's the flagship show of Wrestling Inc., and I get to be a part of it. Who made that mistake?
Well, you and I, we had a great chat this weekend about Clash at the Castle. For people who didn't have a chance to see that, make sure and go back and check out the replay. We talked about all the big news that happened there. Justin, I haven't heard from you since Clash at the Castle. That was quite a crazy show, but how have you been?
I'm great. There is tons of good wrestling to consume, so that makes my life and my job a little bit easier.
Yeah, of course, you were busy chatting about it over on Busted Open Radio. Great show everyone should listen to. Yeah, you're right. It's been such a good time in pro wrestling, and there's been so much stuff to chat about and so much stuff to get into. In fact, there's already, let's just dive right into the news. Everyone who's here, thanks for being here. Like, comment, share, subscribe. AJ Styles, you know, he decided he wanted to have a taste of this whole Forbidden Door thing, Justin. Looks like already he is confirmed to go over to Pro Wrestling Noah. He's going to have a big match there. He's also teasing a possible TNA return. This is something that is pretty cool to see go down with someone as big of a name as an AJ Styles.
It absolutely is, and it's quite fitting because, you know, AJ Styles, he certainly has established himself in the last, what, 7-8 years as being a WWE guy. He's been a top star for WWE. I mean, he's worked a WrestleMania match against The Undertaker, albeit a unique one due to COVID. But, I mean, he's cemented. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. He's going to be in their Hall of Fame one day. But that's interesting because prior to when he arrived famously at the Royal Rumble years ago, he was probably the most well-traveled, most established guy that had been everywhere else but WWE. We wondered, is he ever going to get to WWE? So there's something very appropriate about him now. If they're going to do some of these crossovers, which it appears they are, about him being the WWE representative, it's very fitting, very appropriate. You know, we're seeing this with Pro Wrestling Noah. Of course, we're seeing the current exchange between NXT and TNA. I believe Lucha Libre Online had a report today that WWE is looking to get involved with a promotion in either Mexico and or Puerto Rico. So, I don't like the term, but just because everybody kind of knows what it means, this is WWE certainly pushing their own forbidden door to an extent of working relationships. And it's very exciting. And again, AJ, perfect person to be waving the WWE flag in those territories.
Yeah, it's something that back in the day we could only dream of, Flobo, the idea of a star this big going to different companies and having these kinds of dream matches. I want to throw something to you, though, about AJ Styles doing these matches. Not as fun. I see him going to Noah and having these great matches. I see him going back home, quote unquote, to a TNA. Is it possible, even after the whole fake retirement thing, that maybe AJ Styles is on a bit of a retirement tour visiting these places?
Well, look, whether we know that or not, he does have more years behind him than in front of him. And I do think the question I had after Backlash and Clash at the Castle was, you took two big losses. What's next for AJ? Are you in the OC? Are you not? Are you doing the singles run? Are you not? This is a way that can both keep him fresh, get some of that international indie cred. And it is a swan song for AJ. He's doing something that could be a trailblazing path for a lot of stars that were brought in for WWE when it was in this global superstar search phase. So I think everyone wins at the end of the day.
Yeah, Jose saying, give me AJ Styles versus Josh Alexander. I think that would be a banger. Though I feel like with those guys, you could say AJ Styles versus and then add anyone's name. You're like, oh, that'll be pretty good. And I think Josh Alexander's the same way. You could just say them versus anyone. Oh, that'll be pretty good. Lots of folks in the chat I haven't seen before. Good to see you all. Thanks for coming through. Everyone in the chat, in the comments, let me know who you would like to see AJ Styles face throughout the Forbidden Door realm. I think there's a lot of great dream matches to see from there. Josh Alexander is going to be a tough one to beat, though, of the people who he has the potential to match up with. We got some injury updates over the weekend, and one of them was CM Punk said he is cleared for referee duties, which we saw happen over at Clash at the Castle. But also, Justin, I want to get your thoughts on this. It seems that Damian Priest, after that pretty scary dive to the outside, seems to be okay. And I want to get your thoughts on his match, because he was hobbling around on that leg the entire match. And we said on the after show, one of two things happened with Damian Priest. Either he was fine and he was just selling like a masterclass there, or he was really hurt and he gutted out an incredible match with a hurt leg. Either way, I feel like it was a legendary performance for Damian Priest.
I totally agree. And as I was watching live, that's exactly what I was saying to myself. I was like, well, he's either toughing it out, and he's not, and obviously he's going to finish the match. You always finish a match, or he's just doing what a pro does, and he is selling and adding to the drama. I had a feeling on the sell. I know firsthand this guy is and all the wonderful things he does as a performer. He's great at selling. I once low blowed him in the ring, and he sold it as if I just took a chainsaw to his nuts. I really appreciated that. I've always told him that. It was either way. It was like one way or the other. The man's doing fantastic work. Happy that it appears he was leaning into the slip up that happened in that spot where he got tangled in the ropes, and he leaned into it. And again, he made it look all the more dramatic as he's sitting there giving Razor's Edge, giving South of Heaven, and making it appear like he's bearing the majority of the weight. And Drew McIntyre's no small fella. He's bearing the bulk of the weight on one leg. It just added to the drama and added to all of the chaos that was going on as we boiled down to the end of that title match in Glasgow.
Yeah, we'll obviously talk about the repercussions of that match in a little bit, Flo, but we discussed it a little bit earlier. But you and I, again, we weren't sure what Drew McIntyre's status was going to be after the match. Seems to be okay. I think that's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. You had a situation where you didn't know what he was doing. He took two big losses at a big event. It was going to be a signature event. Whole world was thinking about what he was doing. I love the fact that he was like, yeah, you know what? I quit. Even with the injury, without the injury, it's just kind of like questions you're asking, especially in a Raw where people are tuning in to see other stuff. Now there are more questions to ask from that water cooler.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Let's talk about this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. Of course, as always, I can give a shout out to everybody. No Way, we got Nicholas Yeager, Reaper Brink, Scott Langford, Steven, Bernie, DC, Tori, Laura Rock, Baby Ice, Thomas Miles. And I can't get to all of you. There's so many of you. Dylan Matthews, MJF Mark, Peter P, Chris Wendt, and Shelbowski. I see your comment, and we will get to that when we get to the Drew McIntyre stuff here. But also Ricky Zaldivar and all the other crazy folks that come through every single week. I appreciate you guys so much. Of course, always appreciate the lurkers. Make sure to hit the like, comment, share, subscribe button, and make sure to leave a comment. Flobo, such a big fan of the lurkers, wanted to join them for a little bit. Going to be hanging out with the lurkers, and he's back. Flobo, how was your visit to the lurkers?
Oh, yeah, the lurker said, what's up? They didn't really say much. It kind of did a little kind of like a silent thing. It was awesome.
Yeah. See, I thought he just got attacked by one of the the new characters we just saw. That's what we're leaning into here.
You know, I'm actually glad you say that, because you're more trusting than I am, Justin. I was like, is he one of the guys under the mask? I can't tell. Flobo, where were you a couple minutes ago?
Hey, I did not go to Corpus Christi, Texas. And if I did, I would bring him back a lot more barbecue if I had the opportunity.
Well, Justin, you mentioned it. We ended the show with clearly what the biggest news of the night is. The Wyatt Group made its appearance. Lights go out. We get the creepy music, the piano key playing. They murdered everybody. Everyone's dead.
Good night, everybody.
The gorilla position has been totally wiped out. This is something they've been building up to for a very long time, Justin. Did this deliver in their debut?
Yes, I do think it delivered. I think, you know, they gave us the countdowns and the clues, noting that it was going to be tonight. We get the reveal. Michael Cole and Pat McAfee even kind of acknowledged such when we got one of the interruptions earlier, like, oh, like tonight's the night. Obviously, if you're watching the clock, you see there's still 5-6 minutes to go. So we knew something was coming. And then, yeah, you get the famous Bray Wyatt, different musics of that we've heard, the sound effects. I mean, visually, it looked like we were taking a tour of, like, a haunted house, like a real house of horrors. I mean, it was, I've never seen, and WWE lately, especially under the new way that they're shooting things on Raw and they're trying a lot more new creative TV things, we've seen more of these continuous one shots. This was another one of those that was very, very intriguing to watch them do this. And then we see the different characters. So yeah, I absolutely thought it delivered. I have some questions and concerns long term, but I guess we'll get to that in a minute. But the point of just what we saw a minute ago, and I'm dying to go back. I've only got to see it the once because then we hopped on here. I'm dying to go back and watch it several more times because I know that I'm going to catch more little things that I probably missed just on the initial showing.
Yeah, it looked like there was five people at the end there, Flobo. Now everyone's been calling this the Wyatt Six. There was five people presented. Any predictions? I guess also your thoughts on how this debut went, but also your predictions on maybe who the five people are under the masks, why there is only five people instead of six. Maybe we just got it wrong. I don't know. And also, who else was knocked out besides, or I should say murdered, besides Chad Gable? I didn't realize that these were recognizable people until Chad Gable showed up. And I was like, oh, I know these guys.
He can't be murdered. He has a match next week. I mean,
had a match.
Yeah, he had, past tense. Well, I thought the debut was very cool. You know, there was a lot of ways they could have done this. It could have been an 8 o'clock thing. It could have been just another tease on Raw. They gave us the full send. Very adamant that Nikki Cross was involved. Some of the mask superstars, I couldn't tell, which is pretty cool. As far as it being a white six, it's all rumors as it was. But I do think there was a sixth person to be added. But I'm okay if it's a long-term story of maybe someone trying to stop this nefarious force and they get adopted into it, much like how Dominic Mysterio was the Judgment Day.
Yeah, everyone, definitely in the chat, let me know what you, who you think is there under the masks. I wasn't able to figure out who they all are. I'm very bad at this kind of stuff. Jax, by the way, a friend of the show for a long time, missing for a long time, suddenly shows up tonight. Maybe he's one of the people who's under the mask. Jax, where were you a few minutes ago? But Justin, so I love this debut. I think they did an incredible job. I will say I was getting a little ready for them to do something. I was getting a little burnt out on the QR codes. Now I feel like I want to see them actually do something. What do you think they need to do to keep this interesting? Should they just keep attacking people backstage? Do they need to get right in the ring? How do they handle this?
You don't need to get right in the ring. Lifting the lights up and seeing these guys in full lights up and everything, that's, you can hold off on that. You know, you play as many tricks as you can for a while in terms of lighting and appearance to, you know, this presentation looked, you know, so mysterious and spooky. You know, the moment they're wrestling under just the normal bright lights like everybody else, you know, I don't know. Here's what's going to be so tricky with this. And again, I love the magic. I'm, you know, Raj famously, he and I'd always go at it. He hated the magic. I like my magic. I like my smoke and mirrors. So I thought this delivered for a debut after all the anticipation. First off, you assume that this group is going to have to be skewed towards fighting heels. And so seeing Chad Gable laid out, that would lend into that. And of course the crowd reaction. This is, at least initially, I don't know how long it's going to take to get off this, but at least initially, This is a continuation and a tribute to Bray Wyatt. This is a continuation of that man, of that character, Bray Wyatt, and of course the man Wyndham Rotunda's work. Nobody wants to boo that. So that's the first thing, is you have these dangerous, spooky characters that live in this Firefly Funhouse universe and world, but they're gonna have to be put up against heels for right now because nobody wants to boo them. The other thing that's gonna be interesting to watch how this goes, and I know that they have, you know, the writer that worked with Bray, and I know they have the guys here in Pittsburgh that work with the costumes and the Firefly Fun. All of them are contributing to this. So, like, and of course, Triple H, as we've seen, his team, they tend to be way more open-minded, way more progressive. They think things through. So there's a lot going for this creatively to try to work. But I have to bring up the fact of one concern I would have is, you know, if Chad Gable and his Alpha Academy, if that stuff's starting to go stale or whatever, somebody stands up in the room and says, okay, we got to speed this up. We're dragging it on. Otis needs a turn on Chad. And you can do this for any other creative. Is everybody going to be ready to stand up if needed and say, hey, this is going in the wrong direction, or it's not working, people aren't feeling it, we got to audible. Like, because this is a project, and in some ways it's paying total respect to a man who was lost way too young and all of his character work, is it going to be given a leash that's too long when it's like, no, we need to pull back? I'm not saying pull the plug on it, but no, we need to pull back, we need to pivot, we need to go this direction. Are we prepared to be professional and do that? And I'm not being, you know, that's just a real thing. I can never recall a situation that we've ever had this. Eddie Guerrero tragically passes, and they pay tribute to him through Ray and through, you know, and that's tribute. But you know, this is, I can never recall an active talent tragically passing away while being an active talent, and them trying to have characters invested on TV to basically continue that person's legacy. This is completely unprecedented in WWE. So all things that I'm just kind of keeping in mind, but going to sit back and watch it. But after tonight, though, the first initial impression was I can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah, Flobo, in your opinion, what do you think they need to do next? Because I think Justin brings up a ton of great points. I don't know how I can ever boo this team, but also I don't really know who they can target. Because again, as mentioned, Alpha Academy is kind of on their way out the door as a team anyways, and
sure,
I like them. I don't want to see them get attacked by the Wyatt family, and I don't want to boo the Wyatt family. And I guess I don't really it seems like one of those like things that right now is great, but I have no idea how you actually implement it. And I'm sure they do, but what do you think they do?
Yeah, the first thing I saw when I saw the group, all five of them, it being mixed gender, I was like, well, what other factions are living on Raw? This Final Testament, this Judgment Day, and I guess Alpha Academy. But I wasn't even thinking about Alpha Academy at the time. I was like, well, gang warfare of Judgment Day and Final Testament could work. But at the same time, you want to have that first impact, right? When you're a comic book reader, it's always Batman who gets beat up first on the cover because that makes you go, wow, you know what I mean? So I really don't know. And I think that's the balance we're all having here. It was a great debut. It was a great thing. But a lot of the flaws we had with Bray's ultimately final run about who can work with them is on my mind now until something changes.
Yeah, very fascinating to see where this goes and what's next. A lot of people saying the Creed brothers could help Chad Gable. I think that while that makes sense for a lot of reasons, it also feels like you're lining the Creed brothers up just to get murdered in that situation. It doesn't really help them much. It's weird to say, hey, come help me, and then just get destroyed by this new team, because this new team has got to destroy people. They can't just barely get wins and whatnot.
I also want to know, aside from pre-produced vignettes, which that again will probably be a strength for this group given all the creative people helping behind the scenes, but if they speak at all live in front of a live crowd, who's doing the talking? Because, like, you know, obviously Bray Wyatt was an incredible talker with the mm-hmm. things that he could come up with and the riddles and rhymes. I don't know if his brother, who's portraying Uncle Howdy, I don't know if he has that in him. I've seen him when it's, you got to believe, but I don't know, does he have this type of stuff in him? Eric Rowan appeared to be there with the mallet. Glad to see Eric Rowan back. Tremendous guy. Obviously, very fitting for him to be part of this. Happy, you know. But I don't know. We've never heard the range of speaking from him. You know, and then the other character. You know, so that I'll be really, again, curious too, is who's communicating in this. You know, even all the countdowns that we had in these QR codes, it was all just, again, text and, you know, latitude, longitude coordinates and all this stuff. Like, nobody was really cutting promos and cutting sound bites. So again, I'll be watching who can do that here.
I'll also be curious to see how they tie it to wrestling at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, it's got to end up in a wrestling ring, right? And that was something that I always felt that Bray Wyatt's character sort of struggled with. He had this great character and he had these great promos. And Flip, I want your thoughts on this. But then it'd be like, I'm randomly going to have a match with LA Knight. And it'd be kind of like, well, what does that have to do with the lore you're telling?
Sure.
And I think that might be a trick that they have to figure out as well, as how does this family now find themselves saying, I want a challenge for the world title, you know?
Well, I think that's the issue, and that's going to be something you can pretty much find an answer with long term. One of the advantages now with the new storytelling and the international pay-per-views, that with five matches, you don't really have to have something every single month. You can do is go in the back burner, make things, make adjustments, have people involved long term. But yeah, I'm a firm believer that no matter what conflict you introduce, you have to figure it out. How is it going to fit into a framework of fighting, pins, and submissions? And so far, as it is, we don't see it because it's been so subversive. I have to remember who I am. Am I a fighter? I know damn well I'm not. I'm a guy who gives up pretty easily.
Yeah, they come after me. You win, guys. I'm done. We're good. You know, if they start attacking everyone in the gorilla position, I'm pulling a Drew McIntyre. I'm heading out of there. I'm getting out of there.
I quit.
Everyone, let us know in the chat. It seems like the chat seems pretty positive over the whole thing. And I think visually this debut, visually, it looked great. I think that they pulled it off. They did an amazing job. And I can't wait to see how they move this forward. Of course, Triple H has done a great job of finding ways to make stuff like this work. So we'll see what the next stage is. But for now, I guess it's wait and see. We started the show with Damian Priest and Seth Rollins. Another surprise for the day. I had no idea Seth Rollins was showing up, even though someone had a sign in the crowd. They seem to know what was going on. Seth Rollins says he wants to be the best. He wants to be the champion. He teases entering Money in the Bank. Priest comes out, welcomes Seth Rollins back. They go back and forth about legacy before Priest challenges Seth Rollins, and Rollins accepts. Flobo, I am shocked that Seth Rollins is back already. I feel like I thought he was going to be gone until like November.
Yeah, absolutely. I was shocked, and it was a sight for sore eyes, man. I remember the Monday nights where everyone was singing a song, and there was a part of cynical meme. There was an old wrestling pundit meme being like, oh, there's out of opponents. That's why they bring this guy back. Oh, bah, humbug. But frankly, you know what? If you're bringing back a guy as good as Seth Rollins, then we're still doing pretty well. Money in the Bank is in 2 weeks, and that, to me, already sells the event. Barring the ladder matches, of course. So I'm glad he's back. I'm glad he's back sooner than later. And even if he can't do as much as he did before his injury, it's enough for people to buy a ticket.
Yeah, Justin, this is an interesting situation for me because Seth Rollins comes back. He wins the title. I feel like it's kind of a tough look for Damian Priest. But at the same time, if Damian Priest beats Seth Rollins, it's kind of a tough look for Seth Rollins. I feel like they're in a tough position here.
Yeah, I did not expect to have tonight's Raw result in a match made between Damian Priest and Seth Rollins for the world title the next at Money in the Bank. That definitely surprised me for all the reasons you're kind of stating here. One, I was also surprised that Rollins is going to get back into action here in a few weeks. I thought it would be a little bit longer. For him to be coming right back and be thrusted into a title match, that does kind of make me feel like, do they have plans to put the title on him? I mean, we know Gunther is waiting in Cleveland at SummerSlam. So everything between now and then is just setting up for who's Gunther challenging, you know? I don't know. Are they putting Seth in this because, you know, they wanted to have a nice juicy world title match? Cause I think Cody's probably, if I had to guess, I don't think Cody's going to have a one-on-one title match at Money in the Bank. I think if he's on the Money in the Bank card, we're probably looking at Cody, Randy, and KO versus Bloodline. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, well, maybe they want a world title match, and so we need somebody for Priest, because anybody else who would be a relevant, valid challenger would probably be in the Money in the Bank ladder match. So is this a way just to, hey, have Seth come out? And it's I don't know what it is. One thing I did take away, though, was the fact that Damian Priest, the champion, puts out the challenge, puts out the offer to Seth. Seth, who's getting ready to go the long way about this and go through Money in the Bank, and Priest says, no, I'll just give you a title shot. That's a very babyface thing to do. So we've already been seeing, you know, hints of the Judgment Day having problems and everybody going in the different directions. You know, Priest not even necessarily always wanting Finn and JD and all their help. So this, to me, solidified that Priest is moving in that direction, that he is going to be, by the time we're at the summer's over, he's going to be a full-fledged babyface, probably having shed many of the Judgment Day members from his entourage.
Bernie DC saying, good story to have with Priest saying Seth was his first defense and would give his rematch when he was ready to go. Flobo, yeah, I think that the big story here, the match obviously seems pretty interesting, but Damian Priest, more and more, you rarely hear like making a face turn. I feel like everyone turns heel. No one ever turns, but definitely feels to like he's making that transition over to the other side of the locker room here. Do you think this is a good move for him?
Ultimately, the answer is yes. Judgment Day is great, but it's kind of a clown show, right? I'm not sure if Carlito's in it or he's not in it, and there's key cards involved and purple vests and all that. Yeah, if I'm Damian Priest, I got the gold. I have to go into business for myself. And I'm sure people are hearing the rumblings about Damian Priest not being a strong champion. Well, what better way than take down the workhorse of that brand? So I'm on board. I'm looking at it as a protagonist, first protagonist match at Money in the Bank, because the fact he's like, no, everyone's in the back, it's just me, that's a hand you'd almost never show if you are heel.
Justin, what would you rather see, Gunther versus Priest or Gunther versus Rollins at SummerSlam?
Ooh, that's a great question. Because I could see both being appealing. I mean, I guess probably on marquee, Seth's the bigger draw because he's more established than Priest is in the WWE world. But again, I love Damian Priest and I love me some athletic 6 foot, you know, 6 foot five, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven Damian Priest up against Gunther, who is just out of this world. Good. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, either way, but marquee sexiness, Rollins is probably the bigger draw. If I had to answer that, you know.
Would you agree with that, Flobo, or do you want to fight?
Yeah, it's Rollins versus Gunther. And it's nothing against Damian Priest. I think we're talking about this on our little group chat before. It's like the one thing I think, if I had to nitpick, and I am nitpicking because I'll never be world champion, is that I always feel like Damian Priest is almost too stoic for the championship. Like he doesn't get fired up enough. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Gunther will slap him and he'd be like, hey, man, I don't really like that. I don't appreciate that. I want somebody to be like, or either be like tough and chop back like a Sheamus, or have this weird Batman versus Joker thing, which Seth does so well.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We haven't seen Damian Priest get really fired up emotionally yet. I mean,
he gets more pissed off at Liv getting thirsty with Dom than he does at anybody challenging for his title.
Oh, Priest versus Liv, book it.
for the rights of Judgment Day.
He's doing more ock blocking than he is really getting fired up over his world title. He's just handing out world title challenges. Right.
Yeah. Dom, I don't know. Maybe you're around the right people. We're going to talk about that in a second. But I want to talk real quick about, because I've seen it in the chat quite a bit, Drew McIntyre. A lot of people talk about Drew McIntyre tonight, and he had probably his shortest segment in a very long time. And he quit. He said, I quit. And as he tried to leave, Triple H tried to get involved. Adam Pearce chased after him. Justin Labar, is this... How did you like this? This caught me completely off guard in how this went. I thought they did a great job in how they covered it. What about you? How do you like where this is going?
It was great. He came out. He looked like he's about to burst into tears. This Scottish tough guy looked like he's about to burst into tears. And then he just, you know, screw this company, I quit. And it's a very logical, like, step. That's very logical. Like, he's so fed up. He thinks everything's been done to him, you know. Yet, and then Michael Cole does a great job, kind of like, look, you know, he didn't want to believe and try to give Punk a second chance like the rest of us, and he's just been all consuming. And This was great. You know, this was an intriguing next step. Now we know Punk's going to show up in SmackDown on Friday. And if I can put my Booker hat on, I'd have Punk come out there in front of his hometown crowd and say, you know, it's a damn shame. I'm medically cleared now. And just when I'm medically cleared, the guy quits the company. Oh, well, you know, the best in the world. Who wants some donuts? You know, and then, you know, he's like the pastry king, you know, right? So, like, yeah. I mean, that's it, this. And then there could be somewhere there needs to be a camera somewhere in the world of Drew McIntyre stirring at his house at the moment that he put in his papers. You know, we saw Triple H trying to stop that. He's deactivated all of his social media, has Drew McIntyre. The moment that Drew has handed in his papers, now all of a sudden the one guy that he really wants is now physically able to go. So now Drew's got to get himself back into WWE. I mean, this is great drama. This is, and the personal level that they've made this feel. I mean, this is Bret and Shaw 97. This is great stuff.
Yeah, Blobo, you know, I always say it's always great when you think a story is going to zig and then it zags. That's the best stuff. And that's exactly what I think this story did. I thought Drew McIntyre was going to come out, be angry, yell, demand a fight. The exact opposite. He gave up. He quit. Took his ball and went home. And again, I think the way they showed him walking backstage and even Triple H getting involved, I love the fact that Triple H really very rarely is involved. And even here, it's really just kind of the side of him talking quietly. How did you like how they pulled this off?
I like the twist. Don't get me wrong. I thought this was pretty cool because, again, I expect him to be like, CM Punk screwed me over again and yada, yada, yada. Him quitting was fine. But here's the deal. Of the past 2 months, didn't both AJ Styles and Ridge Holland quit? So I didn't believe that for a second. I thought he was going to come back later on tonight. But I guess he saw the Wyatt Six and bailed, so I don't knock him for that. But I would say I thought he was going to come back and say, I got you. Now I really want to have a chance to say, hey, look, I want my rematch or whatever. So I'm on board the deactivating socials and extra icing on the cake.
Yeah, maybe he saw those guys pull up. He's like, don't you know it's 6:17? They've been saying this is the day. I'm getting out of here. I quit. I'm not a part of this.
I'm out.
One more booking suggestion I'll throw out there is that, again, we know Punk's gonna be at SmackDown. You know, and so if Drew was going to resurface, if so now he knows that they advertise tonight, the Punk's gonna be there. So now if you're Drew, logically, even if you've quit the company, you're gonna try to infiltrate the building. Even as a ticket holder, right? Because you want to get your hand. Now you know where CM Punk's going to be. You know time and place where he's going to be. So I would have him infiltrate the building potentially. And again, if we want to continue making this personal, you know, CM Punk's wife obviously is a worker. She's beloved by the WWE audience despite having not been there in a decade. Have her sitting front row, as we know the families to do and the wives to do. Have her sitting front row. Punk even can give her a nod or shout as he's in the ring doing his promo and whatever and addressing the crowd. And if Drew can infiltrate that arena and basically hold her hostage, essentially. I think that's all very plausible. It's all right there. And everybody would have the oohs, the ahs, and be on the edge of the seat. So again, this has got to continue to progress, right? We're moving towards an inevitable match. I assume SummerSlam just because that's at a stadium. You're not going to waste this in an arena. You're going to fill as many seats as possible with this. So that would be the next step. Have him infiltrate the arena and have him grab AJ, grab April, whatever they call her, and hold her hostage.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, Flo, but we got a super chat earlier today from Shell Bowski. It says, CM Punk wins Money in the Bank, and when he goes to cash in, it'll be Drew's turn to screw CM Punk and cost him his cash in. Also, we have murder in WWE.
Got to put all the points in the super chat.
I've been calling for murder in WWE for a few weeks now, but I've been giving all the credit to Braun Breaker. But Flo, Bo, how do you feel about Shell Bowski's thoughts here? Shell Bowski's booking.
So I don't hate it. I think it makes sense. I mean, that'd be a perfect way to make the Money in the Bank relevant for a new situation. But to me, I always felt the Money in the Bank match is where the King of the Ring used to be. Rookies don't win it. Established guys don't win it unless you really want to troll everybody or heel in that case. The Brock Party, for example. So I like the idea. I don't think it's going to happen here this go around, especially with so much talent waiting for a shot.
Well, Justin Andrew Young says, is another super chat. Says, I was hoping to see Ricochet as one of the murder victims. The guy was already murdered. Leave Ricochet alone.
God, Andrew's treating Ricochet like he's Keddy from South Park. Oh my gosh, he's killing this week.
What's going on this week, guys?
Every week. Wasn't Tim White that character already?
Yes.
Lunchtime suicide. Oh, yes, it was called. Yeah.
R.I.P. Tim White.
Andrew Young says, also, now that Drew versus Punk is the money feud, when do we see Seth versus Punk next year at Mania?
It's so funny. Seth versus Punk felt like that was the most organic thing because they had chirped in interviews prior to Punk's return. And that all of a sudden has just been put to the back burner of now this Drew, the feud with he and Drew has overtaken that. But yeah, they always have the Seth thing to revisit. I would imagine since Seth versus Punk was the plan for this year's Mania, that they would try to revisit that next year at Mania. Because I think not only, because I think mostly, again, there's a story that they can light back up, but just the whole Punk's best in the world, Seth's arguably one of the best. I think they want to showcase that showdown at WrestleMania, of all places. So yeah, I think that's definitely a key match, probably in pencil right now for next year's Mania, but probably in pen by the end of the year. And yeah, but to the other super chat of Punk and Money in the Bank, if you did not see the question that was asked of him at the presser in Scotland about him doing like Hell in a Cell and this, he's not doing no Money in the Bank ladder match. He don't need to. He's 40, whatever he is. He has gotten more heat and more buzz. He's been back in WWE for 7 months now, fellas. Think about this. He's been back for 7 months. Came back in November, end of November. He's had one televised match. That was a Rumble, and he got hurt. Yet he is still one of the highest merch sellers and one of the most talked about and most buzzworthy guys involved in the storyline, and he hasn't had to take any bumps to it. His bump card is pretty full in his career. He's not wasting any bumps on a Money in the Bank ladder match. He's got a beautiful match waiting there with he and Drew, and that's gonna draw all kinds of money for he and Drew. So yeah, no ladder matches for Phil.
Raw Underground confirmed.
Yes. Droy J said, by the way, poor Drew took his sword and went home.
It's Angela.
And Jack says that it looked like Call of Duty and Gorilla. And we also have Official Rebellious listening from England. Good to hear you, Official. Thanks for coming through.
Good morning. It's like 4 o'clock over there? 3 o'clock?
Probably.
Yeah. So you're up late or up early, either way. 4 a.m. is one of those dangerous times where it doesn't matter which end you're on. It's tough.
All bad decisions.
I'm about to say, if you're up, exactly. Well, you know, if you're up at 4 a.m., there ain't no good coming from it.
Nothing good.
I love that. Who was it, Chris Rock? If you go to an ATM after 2, there should be a little message that pops up saying, do you really want to be doing this?
Absolutely.
Do you really need this money for anything worthwhile?
That is actually a very good point. They should have that. Chad Gable died at the end of the show, but before that, Chad Gable won
a match.
I will
remember
you. Before he died, his last moments on this earth, he wanted a match to get back into contention for the IC title. He said he'd take on anybody. Turned out that match was with a big SOB. Gable got completely flattened. Strowman gets the win. After the match, Gable continues to bully Alpha Academy, and Otis finally snaps and shoves Gable, and the Alpha Academy walk away. Later in the night, Otis packs his bag, and Gable makes his intentions to win Money in the Bank, but Justin, as we know, he'll never make it because he's dead. talk to me about, there's a lot of great stuff on this this week. Otis finally snapped, finally pushed Chad Gable, is leaving. Do you like how this is playing out, or did you want more violence from Otis, for lack of a better term?
No, I was fine with how it played out. The pop was huge. It wouldn't make sense that Otis has been so hard to get to, snap out of the brainwashing, that he all of a sudden goes postal on Chad Gable and murders him the first time of the night. So just that shove was enough. And then he wants to get Maxine and Tozawa to safety. That fits with Otis's timeline. And then he packs up and leaves. We're done. It's gonna take Chad Gable and we've seen the Easter eggs of him talking to the Creed. It's gonna take Chad Gable and whoever his next pupils are to physically harm Otis, physically harm Maxine and Tozawa, and that's what's gonna put Otis in the next gear towards, all right, now it's time for a match against Chad, and Otis fires up to the most. But I thought what they did tonight was appropriate, given it would have been weird, like I said, if Otis just Jekyll and Hyde did it.
Adonde says Gable dying pathetic.
Thank you.
Do you feel like we should have gotten a little bit more out of Otis? Something I noticed throughout this segment also is that no one really gave credit to how Akira Tozawa helped empower both Maxine and Otis so that they could stand up for themselves. You notice he was the first one that was really there. And after he stood in the middle of the ring, Maxine kind of got up and then Otis stood up. Should we be giving Akira Tozawa more credit?
In a short word, no. In a long word, heck no. Why are the only person who cares about Akira Tozawa on this level? He was a side character, man. Otis stepped up. I would have wished him did more. I thought they attacked him, and there was this weird side time to do another move when he just said, nah, forget it. But you know what? We were saying this a Clash at the Castle. It's time. It's time for the move. It's time for someone to really break apart. And it's time for Akira Tozawa to go to work for more than 2 days in a row. I mean, let's be real. He should have been in Scotland.
Listen, he's got that part-timer schedule because he's a star. He doesn't need to be there every week. I got to say, my favorite part of the night may have been when Gable was hanging upside down talking trash to the Alpha Academy and saying, that's how you do it, while he's upside down. It was just brilliant to me. Chad Gable, you're a star. Braun Strowman, big win for him. Braun Breaker is another Braun that had a matchup. First off, Sami Zayn comes out and says, now that he's defended the championship, he doesn't care about Alpha Academy getting free anymore. He's over it. Now he wants to know who his next challenger is going to be, and it turns out it's Braun Breaker and Sheamus. Sheamus, he does banger after banger, and he wants to bang tonight. So Sheamus and Braun bang pretty hard until Kaiser shows up and gets involved at the end of the match, causing a DQ. Braun spears Sheamus, leaving Sheamus to get attacked by Kaiser, but Kaiser gets speared also. And then we get a pull apart between Sammy and Braun. Justin, Bron Breakker has skyrocketed up the charts of Jack's favorite wrestler going right now list.
And I think, you know, I think there's always big expectation for whenever he got to the main roster, right? We saw how dominant, how impressive he was in NXT. So there was, we were all fantasy booking, like, what it's going to look like when he gets to Raw or SmackDown. Somehow, and I think it took him longer to get to Raw or SmackDown than we thought. I think we thought it may have been sooner. But and amazingly, somehow, I feel like he is surpassing expectation. I feel like the crowd is connecting. Maybe it's because we've seen so many over the years, again, most of us in previous creative regime, whether it be, you know, Ryback or Veer is coming, or we saw so many like guys built up to be monsters and just, you know, they squash and just whatever. Bron Breakker he's hitting. He's a heel, clearly, but the people are into like seeing, all right, how much destruction is this guy going to cause? Or I got to see this physical specimen in person, him jumping, you know, off the apron to the table, or him going 24 miles per hour or off the ropes or whatever. Like, he's catching. I'm not surprised that he's now in the IC title picture this quickly, because he's catching on with the fans, and good on him. Another heel, another viable heel that is rising up the Monday Night Raw roster. Raw is stacked right now. Yeah. It shows you how much SmackDown's hurting not having Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
You look at the two shows right now, Raw is killing it with the level of what they have going on.
I always say embarrassment of riches. They have so many talented people that can pop in at any moment and be a top person. At the end of this segment, when Kaiser was getting ready to do his move, I thought to myself, it'd be so funny if Bron Breakker speared him too. And then they had that beautiful camera shot of him coming around the other side. I was like, oh my God, Bron Breakker's going to spear him too. And now I'm just like, I can't wait to see who Bron Breakker's going to kill every single week. It's like a fun bingo game. Did you have Kaiser? Yeah, I had him in this spot. Flobo, I want to know how your Bron Breakker murder bingo is going. And also, I know you're a huge Sheamus fan, day one Sheamus fan. A lot of us have wondered what Bron Breakker would look like on the main roster. Would he still be able to look as dominant? Here he is against one of the most dominant guys in WWE. Does he still have that same, this guy's a killer view when he's in the ring with someone like a Sheamus?
Yeah, I got to take a little bit of, or a lot of credit from Justin LeBar here, the genius. And I think that's what we're thinking in NXT. You know, Bron Breakker was on the 2.0 poster child. They built the whole brand around him, but we were saying for months, something's missing. He goes to Raw and does the same exact thing, but at 1.5 podcast speed, he's an absolute killer. I love Sheamus. And I was saying this on Twitter. He's at this point of his career where he's in legend status. He comes out, we give him the pop for his years of service, but that one title eludes him. So you already know what the stakes are. So you want to see him win, but you have somebody who's just so dang dynamic in Bron Breakker, fast twitch, conditioning, or what have you, does it better than Braun Strowman, does it better than Sheamus himself in some places. Then you have yourself a nice, healthy conflict that if someone wins up against that, that opponent for Sami Zayn is already slotted in to be a nice semi-main.
I like how you mentioned how it feels like he's even faster than before. He reminds me a lot of LA Knight in that way, where LA Knight was great in NXT, but once he got in front of a bigger audience, he was a bigger person. I feel like that with Bron Breakker. He was great in NXT, but now in a bigger arena with bigger people around him, he can be a bigger star as well. And I think that's really worked out well for him. Justin, if you have the pen and you got Bron Breakker, are you getting the Goldberg treatment? Is he going to run over everyone for like a year, or do you have him face his first big test sooner rather than later?
Well, no, you need to give him a viable test. You're not going to slow play this and have Goldberg, you know, I mean, obviously WWE had a very bloated roster, so you had the luxury of Goldberg being able to go through a lot of people that it didn't matter that they were suffering squash L's. But no, I mean, you're going to get Bron lined up here for an IC title match sooner rather than later. Again, whether they pull the trigger on Money in the Bank or whether they hold it into the attraction of SummerSlam, but that's going to happen. And I would give him a very fair betting chance that he gets that title, that IC title, because again, he's over with the crowd. Like, he's becoming, I think, an attraction, like we're a part of, where if you're buying your Monday Night Raw ticket, you're paying to drive there, you're paying to park, you're paying to get in there and paying for some, like, he's part of that motivation. If you want to see this guy in person, Jack, if we could, if we're done on the Sheamus Braun Breaker, I loaded something in here, some breaking news as it relates to this Wyatt Six. The merchandise has been revealed. I'm going to share it with you guys.
Okay.
Ooh, so they're calling it the Wyatt Six with S-I-C-K and then six. So six taking the place of an S, and then the let Ooh. Us in, the S is being, hey,
Jack,
in the six.
You see that? Or, Jack, where are you?
No, they've taken me. I'm one of them now.
Yes. And you can see the silhouette of the five of them. So this is what we're going with here.
We're missing a great opportunity. If I had a scary mask, how great would it be if you guys came back and I was like,
let us in.
There we go.
That's a lot better.
There we go.
I love it. I think it looks pretty cool. If you're into spooky stuff, that's great. I'll probably wear the bird one of the three. Is there going to be a sixth person, though, or is that the spirit of Bray Wyatt?
And watching back this the logo up here, this that's in the top left there with the bird and then the six and then the Wyatt, that logo, if you actually go back and watch the how they ended Raw, when you see the one character who's in Gorilla, who's up on like the case, the TV monitor that's right above his shoulder is going in and out of story, but it's showing that logo. I've pulled that up on Twitter while we're talking, so that's what they're going with the six with sick, and six is the plural.
I wonder if these are the sickos Tony Khan was talking about.
do you think Tony could coherently book that long shot?
No, he's booking indoor. Them. This is who he's booking. He's booking four of these guys.
He's booking four of them.
It has to be copyright, right? Is that the reason why it's six and not six? Because that feels kind of weird, like six.
Probably. There's probably, right. As opposed to like S-I-C-K also instead of.
Oh.
Well, maybe. Sean Waltman was S-Y-X-X.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, that's why we call him X-Pac.
That's what we call him. That's exactly right.
Let us good. The I S like does look like a six, though. Oh, yes. Yeah, it was six. So,
yeah, six.
Six. Okay. Very cool. Let us know in the chat and in the comments, are you going to be picking up some Wyatt Six merch? Danny Cochran with a really interesting point here. Akira is the sixth member.
No, that's not true.
I think that makes sense. I think that works. I could see him being the leader of that group, the voice we were looking for.
Book it. Don't book it. Please don't book it. That's
Jack's GM mode in WWE 2K is a mess. You don't want anything to do.
Why is Akira Tozawa holding all the gold? Yeah.
We had a bit of a line of Judgment Day throughout the night, which is typical for Raw. We got Io Sky versus Kiana James versus Zelina Vega in a Money in the Bank qualifier match. Io Sky gets the win, but after Liv Morgan distracts Zelina Vega. Later on, Carlito has a match with Dragon Lee, and Liv comes out and then gets attacked by Zelina, getting a little bit of revenge there. Carlito still manages to get the win in that one. Later, Liv is trying to give Dom's vest back. Priest sees it, and he is very upset about it and yells at Dom Mysterio. So, Flobo, Liv Morgan, she's still tied up with Judgment Day. Looks like she's having a little bit of an issue with Zelina Vega at the same time. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about the soap opera that is Dom and Liv. What are your thoughts?
Well, it looks a lot more engaging than the last time we saw something along those lines. I'm talking about Mandy Rose and Naomi, or even the Bobby Lashley Lana thing. So I like the idea. I like the fact that it works because Dominic was so indomitable before, or so easily swayed before, the opposite, because he became Rhea Ripley's poppy or bommy. You get the idea. I like it, but where is Rhea? She can't send an email. She can't send a text, a sternly worded letter. What's going on with her?
Well, they asked. They asked Finn Balor, have you spoken to Rhea? And he said, N-O spells no. He's staying clear of it, which Finn Balor's a smart fella. Justin, this is clearly this continues to build, and we continue to want to know, someone's going to do something they're not supposed to do. And I find it as intriguing television. And I'm always into like, what's going to be the next beat in this story? Where are you at with the story?
I love it. To Flobo's point, you know, we had, you know, Lana and Liv Morgan teasing to be lesbians. And we've had some bad soap operas in the past, but this is done pretty well. And look, I'm a secure enough man to admit to the world. I had a string of years where I watched Guiding Light.
Oh, God.
That was my soap opera. That was my soap opera.
General Hospital was superior, man. Let's be real.
Flobo, relax.
I was on all my children, man, myself.
Oh, boo!
Get it out of here. We're not even,
all my children? Oh. What a loser.
Hang on. I want to make sure we get our... I want to make sure our name tags are back up so that way the proper attribution to bad takes can be seen by everybody. Jack, you're dismissed for a moment from this conversation.
What's going on?
Hey, fun fact, Guiding Light, Guiding Light was one of the first programs ever when it was radio, one of the longest programs ever in television.
Who's holding the title right now? It's poor Charles. Let's talk about it.
This is great. The way they're doing this is great. I'm predicting that we will. If Priest does lose the title, if in fact he's going to lose this title before SummerSlam, I'm predicting what a SummerSlam match it would be if you have Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley versus Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan. I think that's a money match where you get all conflicts there in one match versus having just Rhea versus Liv or just, you know. But this is so intriguing. It really, and then of course, was, you know, the best use of Pat McAfee's Telestrator. Of him doing the telestrator of Finn Balor swiping the hotel key, and you know this is good. Look, pro wrestling is a soap opera, and mm-hmm. So this is fitting, and it's being done well. And it's being done with characters that people care about, and it's being done with like consistency. And this is a cohesive story being told, and there's Easter eggs in the background, and. I love this. You know, obviously it sucks and it was an audible to be called that Rhea got hurt. And Rhea getting hurt is probably what spun this all off anyways with Liv, because Liv's the one who legitimately hurt her. So I hope Rhea's back sooner rather than later. But this is great for everybody. This is one of the most entertaining parts of WWE television right now every week is how they're doing it. And Dom plays it so great. He doesn't want anything to do with it. And then he's like, maybe I'll zip a little bit. You know, it's done it so well. It's so great.
I love it because you're right. Because I think the thing that makes it great, that I enjoy it the most for, is because Judgment Day are idiots, and it makes it so much fun that they're not smart enough to navigate. Damian Priest is. He's the one that's smart enough to handle this, but Carlito and JD and Dom, they've been painted as idiots for so long that they get their strings pulled so easily. That's what makes this fun to me, is there's just, if this was a smart person that was going on, I'm like, this is kind of weird. I'm not into it. But because they're such idiots, like, they're going to get in trouble. They're not going to be able to figure this out. They're going to do the wrong thing and get caught. It's great. I love it.
Can you imagine the pop the first time Rhea resurfaces?
Oh, it's going to be insane.
Because it's not going to just be, oh, Rhea Ripley's returning tonight, and like, you know, we kick off Raw and here she comes. No, Rhea's going to resurface in a situation. You know, Dom is going to be out there in the ring with Liv, and it's going to be a situation, and Mommy's music's going to hit, and the place is going to go nuts. Of like, oh, he's going to get it. He just got his hand caught in the cookie jar. Here it comes.
In the meantime, though, what is Liv doing? Is the revenge tour over? Like, is she just going to hang around and try to interview with every other Money in the Bank match on the planet? Or am I just worried too much about actual wrestling here?
You worry about too much wrestling. This is all about sex and drama.
Fair enough.
If you had watched...
Don't stop. I swear to God. Do not.
If you had watched Guiding Light did this perfectly in the late 90s when they were doing, you know.
Erica Kane would have done this perfectly.
She lost 16 times in a row.
This is almost like the Ric Flair.
Yes, this is three grown men at 12:08 a.m. Eastern arguing over which soap opera was better.
They're all my children, that's for sure.
There was a lot of, well, I had some By the way, the chat says all my children had some love. Young and the Restless was thrown out in here. There's a few people. We got some Days of Our Lives up here. We've actually got some soap opera love.
I messed with Mar Devil. She was cool. Mar Devil was nice.
Oh man, we gotta move on. Speaking of Judgment Day, Pat McAfee shows us that Finn Balor stole the hotel key. Finn defends himself before telling Priest he's going to win the Money in the Bank and cash in on Cody. When he does, eventually we get to the match. It's Jey Uso, Finn Balor versus Rey Mysterio. Judgment Day comes out. They get chased off by Braun Strowman. There's some chaos. Jey Uso gets the win. First one to qualify for the men's Money in the Bank. Flobo, you like this one? I feel like Jey Uso is a slam dunk to go into this matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though I do think Finn Balor needs some wins to keep that side of Judgment Day going, it's Jey, man. He is an uncrowned champion, it seems. And why not give him the yeet case? I guess he's going to call it that. That'd be something I want to see. So why not get the first hurdle out the way?
Yeah. Justin, this is a... Oh, I still have the Days of Our Live comments up. Justin, your... what are your thoughts on Jey Uso when, I mean, I feel like this is kind of, like I said, slam dunk. Jey Uso's got to be in this matchup. Does he got to win the matchup though?
Well, I was worried that Finn was going to win this. Cause like Jey needs the win and Jey needs to be in the Money in the Bank match. I mean, you know, he's main event Jey Uso and he's over like Grover, but he's never won a big match. And even the big match, I mean, like he's not won as many big matches as you think he would for as over as he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. If that makes sense. So he definitely needs to be in this Money in the Bank match. Whether or not he needs to be the guy that's going to win the briefcase, ask me that in a few weeks when we have the entire field of all six guys. But yeah, I'm glad that he won here. It makes sense that Finn loses out, and now Finn's going to be more. He's already starting to kick and scream a little bit in the Judgment Day clubhouse. Him and Priest are having, so this is going to play right into that. And real quick, because we went right into all the great Liv Morgan stuff, but I want to just quickly give a shout out to the match that she interfered in. The Io Sky, Kiana James, Zelina Vega match was really good. Those three ladies, and all three of those ladies are kind of like under the radar. They're not like the leading ladies of Raw. You know, they're not Liv, they're not Rhea, they're not, obviously Becky's on a, you know, a hiatus or whatever right now. Like they're kind of, but like all three of them showed out of that match. It was in triple threat matches. I've never been in one. I've been a manager and I've been a producer of them. Triple threat matches are hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are hard to put together and they're hard for performers to, they give you a certain amount of creative, they widen your creative canvas, but it's hard to pull off well and not screw up. It can be a lot of traffic. And so I always have a certain amount of empathy when it comes to triple threat matches. And so I'm watching these three ladies who aren't regulars on TV, aren't getting this much TV time on regularity. They got it. And they killed it. So shout out to all three of those ladies. Like they really, you know, really hit it.
I got Kiana winning like a last chance myself. I have her in that match. Maybe not this week, obviously not, but I do have her in a second chance matchup.
I could buy that. Yeah. She looks like a complete package.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Flobo, I know you cover NXT on Draped in Gold every Wednesday. Kiana James hasn't had a lot of chance in the ring lately on Monday Night Raw, but it certainly feels like she took this opportunity to show the world that she can go.
She has to. I think that was the first call up that NXT where the IWC was scratching her head. Who? What? Why? That doesn't make any sense. She's tagging with Izzy Dame, and that was one of the more positive comments. And so you have an opportunity, kick that door down. Yeah, there's going to be some tweaks to her character. She doesn't land the helicopter anymore when she comes out, but I do think there's a possibility for people to get on the train. I would buy the merch if I had the opportunity to do so.
Bernie DC saying her 401k finish is legit. Yeah, she's great. I hope she gets more time in the ring. I think she did awesome.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
We got a few kind of things to wrap up the show. Damage Control versus Carter and Chance. Carter Chance didn't get an entrance, but they got a quick win. And Valkyria comes out to celebrate with them. Justin, I had to eat some crow because they showed up in the ring. And I thought to myself, Carter and Chance used to be the tag champs, now not even getting an entrance. Bad sign. Death knell for them. And then they get a win very quickly over Damage Control. What do you make of this?
Yeah, everybody's stock is down in this. I like Carter and Carter and Chance. They both are very it's an athletic team, but I don't believe in them as a I look at them and I'm like, you know what? I don't feel like they're actually friends out of the ring. I look at them and I feel like I don't buy into them as a tag team. Like individually they do some cool things in the ring, but I'm not believing in them. And then Damage Control, as Io Sky is saying, like Damage Control needs to change. Like they are just so floundering. And I understand not everybody can win. Not everybody can win every week. You gotta take some losses, but Damage Control has zippy credibility. So if that was Nikki Cross, who was the first one we saw in the new Wyatt Six, maybe she should have murdered Damage Control. So we could.
I'm appalled. I'm shocked and appalled because Chance and Carter are like legit on social media darlings. They are doing tandems all the time. I see their friendship. The parting isn't a gimmick, but I think it's kind of like a means to an end. We haven't seen that group for a long time. They don't win many matches. Last week, you had the beat of Damage Control getting losses. Now EO's even more frustrated because they're basically slipping around on banana peels the way they lost. I think everyone wins in this one, is it at least?
Rich, really? That's interesting. I agree with Justin on the Damage Control thing. I think that it's kind of outstayed its purpose, and I don't really know why they're a team anymore. Carter and Chance, I like them as a team. We talk about the Wyatt family, how does it translate into matches? For them, I feel like the group that likes to go out and party all the time usually isn't the team that I'm rooting for. They're the team that is like the pretty deadly types, you know, where you're like, oh, these guys are just jokers who aren't taking it seriously. But these two, I don't really get the correlation between them being party people and tag team champions.
So I think that's an issue that has to be solved. You're absolutely right. But I think the story with Damage Control not getting wins, they lost the team that is essentially the only jobber team in the division. So that would be something that'd be a lot more frustrating. So yeah, Chance and Carter, they're not fully baked yet. Fine. But as far as the Damage Control, what are we doing? I think this is great.
Well, we had another team that might be on its last legs. Karrion Kross calls out the New Day, challenges either Woods or Kingston, says probably Kingston because he likes Woods to stay in the back. Kingston says, okay, I'll take the match. Woods didn't look too happy about it. Justin, I know you're a big fan of Karrion Kross. Do you think that he's starting to get that momentum here? Is this working for you?
It's in the right direction. I'm not going to overscore it yet, but it's in the right direction. There's finally like some substance here. Like he's got Kofi and Woods who are, you know, so well liked by the audience and credibility. And, you know, they're the remaining, you know, 2/3 of New Day with Big E, sidelined. So I like that. Like, he's like, he might be who finally breaks them up. New Day's been around since November of 2014, a decade. That is an eternity in today's pro wrestling when you consider how much programming there is per week. And they've never really ever teased the breakup anyways. They've never gone that route. So now we're finally doing that. So that's got my attention with Kross. If he's the one who finally breaks them up and gets one of them to turn to the dark side, I'm intrigued by that. I am a big fan of Kross. I'm baffled by Kross as a whole because I loved him in NXT. They handled him so well with him as NXT champion. Obviously, he went to the main roster, and when Vince was still in charge, it was a terrible whatever. But even since he's been brought back and since Triple H is in charge, like it's felt like the projects that Triple H is not going to let die. Mm-hmm. We are going to get crossover, damn it. Authors of Pain, we're going to get them over. I don't know if Authors of Pain got it. Paul Ellering, bless his heart and his credibility with the Road Wars. But I believe in Kross. I want to see Kross succeed. So I'm trying to follow this through, and this is the most substance he's been given. So I'm intrigued for this match next week to see what comes of it.
Flobo, I'm going to give you the flip side. I know you're a huge fan of the New Day, but they have been around for almost a decade. Is now the time to break them up, or do they go the Cena route and never turn?
I like the fact that Justin said that 10 years an attorney in wrestling. That's an attorney in a marriage, man. That goes on forever. So I know there's some haters in the chat that say I have this weird agenda about the Final Testament, and I'm a giant hater. But I would say my original problem with that group was I didn't know what kind of group it was. Was it paramilitary? Was it spooky? Was it psychological? And so as much as I don't want the New Day to break up, it looks like Big E is going to be out indefinitely. Why not make Karrion Kross clearly a psychological guy, the Sean O'Hares of the WWE roster? Remember that whole gimmick? And say, hey, look, man, I'm just telling you things you don't already know. That is something you can sink your teeth into. Whether you like it or not, that's up to you. That's why we have faces and heels. But my biggest question is finally answered. Who is Karrion Kross? And it took, like, what, 2 years?
Yeah, it did take him a while. He was the victim of a lot of start-stop situations to get here, though. So hopefully this is where they're able to really get that. He's able to get a lot of that traction because he's definitely been struggling with it. Last thing on the show, Isla Dawn and Alba Fyre had a run-in with Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. And Justin, I said on the Clash the Castle after show, it got the chat a little upset at me that I was glad that Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill lost the titles because I didn't see any team looking like a threat to them. And I felt like this was a good example of what I was talking about. These two teams run into each other. They want to have a match. It looks like a good matchup. I feel like if Jade and Bianca were backstage and a team approached them, I'd say this is a joke. So to me, it feels like the division's healthier with a beatable tag team as champions.
I would agree that if you're going to get the belts off of Bianca and Jade, who I love both of them. Mm-hmm. If you're going to get the belts off of them, do it in a triple threat where they don't get pinned. I agree with that. It did feel like a little bit, okay, well, Piper Niven's going to lose. Drew's going to get screwed. We're going to give somebody from Scotland the win, so we're going to give it to Isla and Alba. But I agree. I do think it makes for maybe a healthier tag division because Bianca and Jade were just kind of leaps and bounds beyond everybody else from terms of star power. Mm-hmm. And now that they don't have the titles, Bianca and Jade, you can start to work towards, a singles match between the two or something. You can work towards something bigger than women's tag team division. No disrespect to that division, but Bianca and Jade are just bigger than that. It surprised me. It was not on my prediction card. I got this one wrong. I did not think that was going to happen, but having seen how it played out, I get it.
Yeah. All the Triple J got that one wrong. Yeah. Flobo, any thoughts about this run-in? You want to see these two teams run it back?
Jade and Bianca and Isla Dawn and Alba Fyre, or Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler and
Shayna Baszler and Stark and Dawn and Fyre.
Yeah, absolutely. They're talking about teams that have potential that could be that could run the board. If Jade and Bianca weren't going to be in the division anymore, it would be Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. I would say if you had stock in Shayna Baszler, you're probably bankrupt now, having the loss at NXT Battleground and taking the pin in Scotland. And it's just crazy because a lot of the OGs remember that Elimination Chamber when she totally ran the table. So yeah, I want this, I won't say hardcore, but this hard edge team to really get cooking. I'm not sure it would be at the expense of the champions, but I do think there's some stock value in that.
I know we're up against our time, our upper time here, but I want to ask you both because I'm genuinely curious about this. Shayna Baszler, her brightest spot in her main roster run was when she was against Ronda Rousey, I think for a SummerSlam match, right? Mm-hmm. And that was because the crowd had pretty much, they were done with Ronda.
Yeah.
So Shayna got to lean into that and kind of got to like give Ronda the boot, right? Shayna's got MMA credentials. She's tough. She's not the biggest, but she's tough. She got the credentials. What is it going to take to? Because I feel like she should be bigger than what she is, but she's just kind of just there. Like, what's it going to take? Like, do either of you believe in Shayna Baszler at all? Again, this is a woman who is legit knocked out and made other women tap out in the MMA world. So she's got Ronda credentials. She's got Brock credentials. Like, she's got Bobby Lashley credentials. Like, what is it going to take here for Shayna to upper value?
I'm a huge Shayna Baszler fan. I loved her run in NXT. I thought it was one of my favorite runs as far as champions go in NXT. I think what's hurting her is just consistency and the fact that she has that big win with Ronda Rousey and then she disappears for a while. And then she does, you know, we make fun of other companies for doing it with certain people. I think it happens to Shayna Baszler quite a bit where she'll come out, she'll do something, she'll have some big matches, it'll start building, and then she just disappears for a while. And I don't know why. Flobo, I don't know if you have a different thought process on this, but I think Shayna Baszler could actually be I think she's someone who could be like that person that is a threat to the very popular stars like a Bianca Belair or a Jade Cargill that maybe isn't as big, but because of that background, we believe she has a chance in the ring.
I think her presentation got hit going to the main roster, changing her theme song, and definitely not giving her the time to do all of her rituals, you know, coming into the ring, wiping her feet, doing the circle. But the biggest thing for her, as long as she's been on the main roster, say for what was that, Elimination 2020? Was that the one I'm talking about? Where she like destroyed everybody? She was always in the tag team. It was like her and Zoe, her and Ronda, her and Nia Jax. She was always the heavy. If you want him to tell him that she's a star, if she has these credentials, the little advice thing is over. Let me know. Give me an ass chances in hell. Like when Billy Gunn got the run in 99, let you sink or swim. Can you handle a string of main roster one-on-one feuds over a period of 3 to 4 months? And if you can't, that's on you. WWE did right by you. But you can't make that happen if you're in a division that never seems to be consistent in the women's tag team division.
Yeah. Shayna was part of that NXT PLE at the UFC.
Yes.
Yeah. She was tagging with Lola Vice and they had a breakup and then they had that blow off match.
Didn't she lose?
She lost. She lost two matches in the week. But here's here's my point, Justin LaBar. The person she lost to was a person she was tagging with a month before.
Yeah.
I need like straight up single matches. If she loses those and she sucks with those, I get it. But this whole, we're a tag team, we're breaking up, here's a match, I lost. Ugh, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Well, also, she's the kind of character that she needs dubs. I don't think everyone needs dubs. I don't think it's mandatory for, like, LA Knight can live without wins and he'll still be okay. But if you're going to be I'm a legit kick-ass person, you need to win matches. If you're losing all the time, then it doesn't matter how tough you say you are. You lose all the time. So she needs big wins to back that up. And it needs to be consistent enough that we get to feeling like, oh yeah, she's dangerous. Not, oh, she comes in, she loses, and then she disappears for a while. But I'm a huge fan of her. I really hope she gets the opportunity to do some stuff. We do have a super chat I want to get to before we wrap up though. And it is from Bigfoot Sneakerhead. Says, how do you feel about TNA working NXT? I believe Drew McIntyre will be on TNA. He takes some time away from WWE, then pop up on CM Punk, Drew versus Moose. Justin, I don't get to talk to you about NXT very much. How do you feel about this partnership between TNA and the idea of Drew McIntyre in TNA?
I don't know if we'll see Drew. While it makes sense because he just, you know, quit WWE, I don't know if we'll see that. Just because him and Punk is so high profile, I don't know if you're going to muddy the water or confuse the audience of having him veer off with anything right now, at least to TNA. But it's exciting. TNA is that's a funny story, right? TNA was the first other brand that popped up after 2001. WWE buys WCW, ECW goes out of business, and so WWE is the monopoly in 2001. TNA is the next thing that pops up, and TNA has certainly had several different periods of time where we thought, oh, they're dying, they're done, but here they are still in 2024, still with great talent, you know, not the biggest houses, they don't have a great distribution TV deal, but they're still existing. So I'm happy for that. I'm happy to see guys and girls still having a place to try to get some work and paychecks. I don't see Drew so much right now, but I'm intrigued with, you know, we have this NXT Battle Royal tomorrow, and I'm intrigued by that. I'm intrigued by the perspectives of what if we did get to next November where we'd see War Games happen, and what if we had an NXT versus TNA War Games, and you have some TNA talent, but, you know, what if the ringer for Team TNA was somebody who's got great WWE history, whether it's a Nick Nemeth, whether it's a Matt Hardy or Jeff Hardy. Like, I think there's a ton of potential with this, with TNA. WWE certainly is the ones that, they have, they're in the driver's seat, right? I mean, you know, like, and I think that's why they're working with TNA. TNA is of no harm to them. Mm-hmm. If anything, I'm wondering, is the long play by the devious Nick Khan, is the long play here, TNA has a very sexy library for your AJ Styles documentary, for your Kurt Angle documentaries, for, like, is the long play here, we're going to Netflix. Are they softening something up here of purchasing some assets for TNA and rolling them under like that? I feel like this is a bigger, this is a game of chess here, not checkers. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm interested to watch what's going to take place here. But it's interesting to watch, because I don't think Drew's going to be involved in it right now, but it's interesting to watch. Cause I think there's a bigger, something bigger is at play here than what we're seeing week to week.
Yeah, Flobo, how would you like to, what are your thoughts so far on how the TNA NXT matchups are, or crossovers are going? I'm very fascinated in them. I love to see the people going back and forth. And I think it, to me, I feel like it's a great way for WWE to scout and find more talent that can work on TV that maybe they're not going to get through NIL deals anymore. They can say, hey, try out NXT, or also you have your people who, you know, are talented, but you just don't have a space for them on TV yet. Maybe they can try working over there for a little bit. You know, you see like Tatum Paxley just did a show for TNA. I think it's a great opportunity for everyone. And also, I think it helps TNA recruit, because if I'm a wrestler and someone says, hey, you can work all these different places or TNA, I go, hey, maybe if TNA, even if they're not paying me as much, that is kind of the back door to WWE now. That makes a lot of sense for me to go over there. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, more paths to more ways of success, right? To me, it should be a finishing school. I think one of those slight gripes you hear about the Performance Center is that with the same teachers, people have the same seasoning when they get better at the game. You go to another locker room and see a different culture. Even if it is a one that there, it's friendly to the main place, you get to see how other people do business. So it's always great. I think for now, a lot of the TNA appearances of WWE talent don't really have attraction. To be honest with you, I didn't even consider watching that pay-per-view show live until I heard about Tatum Paxton's appearance. And I'm not the only one. I'm not the watcher. I don't get to watch everything. So it may seem as one-sided on the surface, but ultimately under the hood, on the back end, with libraries, intellectual property, with creative ideas, with a creative lab of new match types, it definitely could be something for both companies to benefit.
Shabowski with the super chat saying, I'm in business, and if I was a betting man, this all leads to WWE buying TNA. If WWE offered 40 mil like Tony did for Ring of Honor, it sells tomorrow. This is something I saw Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics say. So this is me just copying what he said from a tweet. But he made an interesting point about that maybe not being realistic, because right now WWE is trying to avoid antitrust monopoly charges, and to buy the number three company certainly wouldn't help them argue against a lot of those charges. So in his prediction, that wasn't likely, but again, I don't know. That's just a tweet I saw.
Well, I choose to that point. I could see not buying the company maybe, but if they wanted to put a working relationship in place with TNA to where, again, it's like they already have their Performance Center pipeline. If they wanted to say, look, you know, we have our main roster, we have our NXT, there's only so much time to go around. But if it was like, hey, even TNA, hey, we'll help fund you a little bit. Kind of like how what we've come to know now, that Vince was funding ECW in the 90s on the down low. Mm-hmm. So even if they were help funding TNA a little bit, and to say, look, we're funding you for the purpose of you're one more pipeline to get talent in, teach them TV, teach them cameras. You know, we already try to do that now. And you're your own product, market how you want. You know, maybe we'll do a little generous crossover here and there. But then the key being for WWE, we're funding you on the stipulation of when you have somebody in their talent, we get to see your books. We get to know when their contract is coming up. And within the final 6 months of their contract coming up, we get the first right to bid on them. Before they get to be talking to AEW or anybody else, if we see them in your pipeline as valuable, we get the first right of refusal to them. Mm-hmm. You know, like that could be something to where it's like, so you're letting the TNA brand exist the same way WWF let the ECW brand exist, but the same way that Vince got the Dudley Boys, got Tommy Dreamer, got Taz, got RVD, got all those talents that WCW didn't. I mean, if you look at ECW back then, Sandman as Hack and Raven, you know, that was pretty much it. Pretty much everybody else from ECW that had any success went to WWE. So if you basically kind of set that thing up of like, all right, TNA, you do your creative, you do your own thing, we'll fund you a little bit to help keep you floating, but we get the first right to bring this talent into our system. You know, that there's something there. And oh, by the way, in that deal, we get to, for a certain nice discounted price, can use some of your library again for our A&E documentary on AJ Styles we want to do. You can't do a documentary on AJ Styles and not have access to TNA footage. Right.
Right.
Like, so things like that. I mean, I think all that is probably in play. I really do, especially with Nick Khan and how, again, 3D chess he seems to be playing with everybody right now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's a win-win for everyone, by the way, if that happens. One, yeah, I want to see an AJ Styles documentary with the entirety of his wrestling background. Well, maybe not New Japan, but that's separate. But, you know, like, I want those things. And also, again, like I said, as a wrestler, that's just another way I can get my foot in the door over at WWE with that otherwise may not be open, because NXT is probably going to be mostly those NIL athletes that are coming in, that it's probably gonna be fewer and fewer indie people, but that's your indie way to get into NXT and get into WWE.
And real quick, what the vision was prior to COVID in 2020, and I think they're starting to pick the vision back up. What the vision was prior to 2020 COVID, Triple H, when he was in charge of NXT, that was his baby, he wanted performance centers on all continents. It wasn't just, and then we got NXT UK. He wants an NXT Japan. He wants an NXT Mexico. He wants an NXT Australia. And so, again, if you start to acquire a property like a TNA that has a separate pipeline, that all feeds into that. Whether it remains TNA or whether you spin up and all of a sudden it's NXT, whatever. Like, that's been the goal, is to have a breeding ground that is global that all feeds back to Stanford at the end. So this is a 10 moves ahead in chess right now.
Yeah, it's very cool to see. And also now it makes TNA a bidding rival for talent against someone like AEW. I think before that wouldn't have been the case. I think before this partnership, if AEW wanted someone that TNA wanted, tough luck, AEW's probably going to get them. But now there's a different wrinkle in that. It's not exactly apples to apples anymore. There's, you know, it might be harder for AEW to keep people from TNA, which might be another one of those 4D chess things that Nick Khan's looking at, like, oh.
Well, especially if you're under AEW contract and your contract expiring and you're like, look, I'm part of a roster that's over 150 people and I get one TV match every 3 months. You know, and Father Time does no job. so if you're, you know, if you're in your 30s and you're like, God, I'm every month I'm wasting my body, I'm getting older, like, yeah, that's the thing. No matter how good Tony might be paying in AEW, if you can go somewhere else and get paid comparable, even a little bit less, but you're getting work, do you feel like you're like moving up you're progressing up your career ladder? That goes a long way. That's a real thing, by the way. AEW is paying a lot of people, which is awesome. Not going to begrudge that. Pay people, that's great. But there's a lot of people that are getting paid that aren't getting used. And again, this is a business where your body is your vehicle and time does no job. So when you're sitting around and you're not being utilized, that paycheck's nice, but also it's like, hey, if you have some things you like to accomplish within your craft, you're not going to get it done just sitting around being used once every 3 months for a Dynamite or a Rampage or a Collision.
Yeah, I always like to say too, wrestling is because a lot of times people say, oh, I would love to get paid and sit at home. And I respectfully say that's because most people have a regular job. But wrestlers, they want to do this. They're in this because they want to do it. They're not people who have a regular 9-to-5 that they fell into and they like to take vacations. They're people who are like, I love this. I want to do it. And so if they have the to get paid and not do it, that doesn't work for a lot of people. And now some of them, they're like, whatever, pay me my money. But like a lot of them, this is what they want to do. And so if they have the opportunity to do it, they're going to do it. Lots of good stuff one way or the other. We got to wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for joining us in the chat. A lot of folks tuning in live. Appreciate all of you, whether you're in the chat, chatting along. Thank you so much. Whether you are just lurking, thank you for lurking. Whether you're spamming us with a bunch of stuff in the chat, thanks for being here.
Don't thank the spammers. What are you doing?
Before we get going, where can the world find you online? What overall thoughts of the show, all that good stuff.
Which one of us?
Oh, Justin.
As I heard Justin too. So.
Oh, sorry. I missed that. This was a great show. Really entertaining. Obviously, again, if you're following the clues, you kind of thought the Wyatt group was going to get unveiled, but there's a lot, as we talked about, a lot to sink your teeth in. So really good show. So I'm very intrigued for Friday SmackDown for the CM Punk angle. I'm very intrigued to where this Wyatt 6 is going to go. Follow me at Justin Labar across the socials, Twitter, Instagram, what have you. And of course, aside from here on Monday nights on Wrestling Inc., every single Sunday, I'm co-hosting Busted Open on Sirius XM channel 156, 9 a.m. to noon. So it's great because after we've had the entire week, and then especially if there's a Saturday PLE, you wake up and you get myself and my good brother, Jonathan Hood, as we are talking all things pro wrestling on Sirius XM channel 156. So check it out there.
And Flobo Boyce, how about yourself? Where can we find you and overall thoughts on this week?
The last week tonight of professional wrestling, Bust Open Radio Sundays, y'all. One of the hottest Raws I've seen in a while. A mystery finally comes home to roost, and we have to go watch back for more clues. That's how it's done. That's amazing. You know me, I'm the guy on the SmackDown after show here on Wink, right here on this channel. But every Wednesday, this guy, Jack Farmer, and I combine like Voltron to break down NXT content in a way that hasn't been done before or since. Draped in Gold. Learn more at drapedingold.com. Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern.
If you guys know what Voltron is, leave us a comment if that hasn't aged out yet.
You AMC. I don't want to hear you.
You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. I thought this was one of the better Raws that we've had in a very long time, and it was one of the best wrestling shows in a while. This top to bottom was a great week. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. I will be on the After AEW show here on Wrestling Inc. on Wednesday, also with Flobo on Wednesday morning to cover NXT. But also, make sure to follow at Wrestling Inc. so you can keep up with all the latest wrestling news. And Baby Ice says, the Five Lions coming together to make one super robot? Yeah.
Let's go.
But make sure to follow at Wrestling Inc. And we will see you guys after NXT tomorrow to cover that, and I am now hitting the end stream button. Beep boop.
Got it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.